You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back, joined by David Kramer. He is today the Senior Director for Human Rights and Democracy at the McCain Institute, a man who has served in a number of capacities, both in government and in the private sector in the Washington arena particularly, notably as an Assistant Secretary of State for Democracy, Human Rights, and Labor, also as the president of a marvelous organization, Freedom House, for a number of years. David Kramer, welcome. It's good to have you with us here at Secure Freedom Radio.
Thanks very much, Frank. Thanks for inviting me.
I caught your recent article in the American Interest past week, I believe, on U.S.-Russian relations, sort of seen through the prism of a particularly odious performance by our Secretary of State, his misadventure in Sochi, I think is what you called it. Talk about John Kerry's misadventure, if you would, David, and sort of what it tells us about the state of the Obama administration's approach to Vladimir Putin's Russia.
It seemed to be a trip to Sochi to meet with President Putin and Russian Foreign Minister Lavrov without a point. I really don't understand what the purpose of Secretary Kerry's visit was, other than to reestablish some sort of communication directly and personally with the man who's responsible for ongoing violations of the ceasefire in Ukraine, for providing support to Assad in Syria, announcing he would deliver the S-300 sophisticated missile system to Iran, and gross human rights abuses on a daily basis in Russia. And yet Secretary Kerry expressed gratitude and thanks to Putin for agreeing to meet with him. I really don't see the point, and it particularly was troubling, I think, coming just before European leaders are supposed to meet next month to renew sanctions that they have in place against Russia for its invasion and aggression against Ukraine. I fear Kerry's visit is going to open the door for Europeans to say, well, if the U.S. is stepping things up and returning to business as usual, then why shouldn't we?
Yeah. Our guest is David Kramer. He is the Senior Director for Human Rights and Democracy at the McCain Institute these days. He held senior positions in the Department of State during the George W. Bush administration, has a lot of experience with Russia, and has obviously considerable concern about what Putin is up to. And you were making a larger point, David, it seems to me, which is the thing that I think we've largely lost sight of in this country, namely that Putin is engaged in inimical behavior, inimical to our interests especially, across a broad front. And we seem to see the Obama administration giving him a pass on most of it, even Ukraine. Am I missing something here, or is that really the upshot of not just the Kerry interactions in Sochi, but sort of this whole idea that Obama was overheard promising that he'd have more flexibility in his second term when it came to the Russian portfolio?
Exactly. He made those comments to then-President Medvedev before he turned over power back to Putin when he returned to the presidency in May of 2012. And I do think it is an accurate reflection of the broader problems we're seeing, which is, yes, the U.S. has imposed sanctions against the Putin regime for what it's done in Ukraine, but it has refused to provide Ukraine with the military means by which Ukraine could defend itself against further Russian aggression, even though the U.S. Congress, in unanimous consent last December, authorized the provision of military assistance to Ukraine. The president has refused to do it. His Secretary of Defense, his Secretary of State, the Director of National Intelligence, the Supreme Allied Commander at NATO, all of them have come out in support of providing military assistance for Ukraine. The president has refused to do so. And I think that's been a terrible mistake. It's a betrayal of the promises we made to Ukraine. And in a memorandum in 1994, where Ukraine agreed to give up its nuclear weapons in exchange for guaranteeing the sovereignty and territorial integrity of the country, But it's a broader issue, as you say. It's about an egregious human rights situation inside Russia, culminating in the murder and assassination of Boris Nemtsov, one of the opposition leaders, February 27th. Those responsible for that have not been brought to justice. And the support that Putin provides to other authoritarian leaders around the world. So I don't think we have done what we should be doing in terms of standing up to Russia's assault on human rights inside its own borders, a violation of sovereignty and territorial integrity of its neighbors, and the support for threatening regimes elsewhere in the world.
Just out of curiosity, David Kramer, I wonder, there's no way to know for sure, but I imagine that you were involved in some form or fashion the debate about our very strong pressure on Ukraine to relinquish to Russia those nuclear weapons shortly after the Soviet Union collapsed. Do you think that we would be seeing a different state of play at the moment in Ukraine had it still access to or control, more to the point, of those former Soviet nuclear capabilities?
I was in the think tank world at the time, Frank, so I wasn't in the government. But certainly Ukrainians have said they have some regret about relinquishing those weapons. They believe that had they retained control over those weapons, that the current situation might not be what it was, that Russia would have second thoughts about invading a neighboring state that also had nuclear weapons. Hard to say.
It is hard to say. But, you know, what I'm struck by is at a moment when, if we're I think, personally, enabling the Iranians to get in the nuclear weapons business, the question of whether we're still incentivizing people to forego, sort of nuclear deterrent capabilities, indigenous nuclear deterrent capabilities. This seems to be another straw in the wind, and one that I suspect is arguing for getting your bomb rather than foregoing it.
That's right. And I think you put your finger on it, which is that because we have not lived up to the Budapest Memorandum of 1994 of following through on guaranteeing Ukraine's sovereignty and territorial integrity. And to be clear, Putin is the most egregious violator of that memorandum. Russia signed that in 1994, but we have not done our part in doing so. I think you're absolutely right that it does increase the likelihood that countries will seek nuclear weapons capability because they don't have the confidence in the United States that we will be there in their time of need.
Yeah. David Kramer, let me turn to one other issue that is, I know, near and dear to your heart, and that is the situation in human rights elsewhere in the world. We touched on Russia's deplorable conduct at the moment in that regard internally, but one other population that is very much now being oppressed and in some cases eradicated from the Middle East is the Christian minority in several countries there. As you look at the sort of implications of that practice going unchecked, how does that translate into the larger problem that we see in the Middle East at the moment? Is it a factor? Is it a symptom? Is it something that if you don't attend to it, everything else probably gets worse?
I think, as you're getting at, Frank, the freedom of religion is one of the fundamental universal freedoms and values that we all have to uphold. And what we see in the Middle East is the persecution of minority religious groups, in particular the Christian population in certain countries. And they're being targeted, of course, by the Islamic State, but also by others, including the Syrian regime of Assad. And we see other religious minorities in Iran and elsewhere being persecuted. And so it is a terrible stain. And it's contributing to the instability and violence because it means that the rights and protections of these people are not being preserved and respected, and it leads to greater violence and instability. And we have to do a better job of ensuring the protection of religious minorities in the Middle East and elsewhere around the world, for that matter. This is the kind of value that we have to protect.
David, we are hard out of time, but this is an important topic for a further conversation, I hope, in the near future. Thank you very much for joining us and for the work you're doing at the McCain Institute. Keep it up and come back to us again soon. Andy McCarthy joins us. We'll talk with him next about another of those fundamental freedoms, freedom of speech, and the assault on it here by the jihadists. Straight ahead.